طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice, that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and is continued in his memory. This is John Roberts. One of the missions of This Week in Palestine is to expose the machinations and effects of the Israeli lobby, especially how it operates in the United States. This morning we take a look at how the lobby operates in Virginia and what a courageous group, the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights, is doing to combat its infiltration into the economy and public education system of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We get a real picture of the depth and breadth of the Israeli lobby's reach into the fabric of American society. In this forum, three members of the coalition speak in Washington, D.C., about their programs to counter the Israeli lobby.
Virginia Coalition for Human Rights is the topic of our final panel. It's an extremely effective organization, and I'm not going to say anything about it other than introduce each speaker in turn and take your questions. Our first speaker from VCHR is Paul Norsey. He's been active with the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights since its founding in 2016. He's also active in several organizations working for peace and justice in the Middle East, including the Palestinian Christian Alliance for Peace, New Dominion PAC, the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, the Arab American Democratic Caucus of Virginia. He was also Barack Obama delegate to the Virginia State Convention in 2008, a Bernie Sanders delegate to the Virginia State Convention in 2016, and has served in various Get Out the Vote and Democratic campaigns. Norsey has lived and traveled extensively in the Middle East, including Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, and he has a BS in civil engineering, an MS in engineering management, and is a licensed and practicing civil engineer with wide-ranging experience in land development, public works in Virginia, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. Please welcome Paul Norsey.
Thank you very much, Grant. Thanks, everyone, for being here, and thanks to the organizers for such a great event again this year. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights and who we are and some of the activities we've participated in over the past couple of years. As a background to the VCHR efforts, I would like to share a very inspirational quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was an activist against Nazism in World War II and ultimately paid for that with the ultimate price of his life. The quote is, "We are not simply to bandage the wounds of victims beneath the wheels of injustice. We are to drive a spoke into the wheel itself." I believe that for positive investment to work, it should also be paired with direct actions such as divestment, boycotts, and sanctions to have a real effect. Yeah. BDS is putting the spoke in the wheels. The Virginia Coalition for Human Rights is a broad coalition of about 17 organizations right now, representing really over 10,000 Virginians, if you count all of our member groups. And it includes a wide variety of organizations, including Jewish Voice for Peace, American Muslims for Palestine, the Palestine Christian Alliance for Peace, and other faith-based and secular peace and justice organizations. And we're always interested in getting more people and organizations involved, so if you're interested, please let us know or come to our table or check out our website, vchr.org. We started, we first, here's a list of our member groups. I don't know if you can read all those, but those are also listed on our website. We first started in 2016 when we came together on an ad hoc basis when two anti-BDS motions were introduced in the Virginia General Assembly. HB 1282 would have punished people and organizations who support BDS for Palestinian human rights, and House Joint Resolution HJ 177 was a resolution that condemned and insulted the BDS movement. Many of us, including myself, were shocked at this sudden blitz attack on free speech rights of Virginians, and we quickly formed an ad hoc coalition, which eventually became the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights. 1282 was a pretty typical anti-BDS bill. It was it would have required, quote, state public bodies to include in every contract of more than $10,000 a provision stating that during the performance of the contract, the contractor agrees to not engage in the boycotting of Israel and will not contract or subcontract with any person or firm or corporation that engages in the boycotting of Israel. And it would have been applicable to all subcontractors and vendors. In other words, it was basically a loyalty oath wherein anyone or any corporation that wanted to do business with the state of Virginia would have to give up their constitutional rights for free speech. And we found that very offensive and unconstitutional, and we worked hard with the little time we had to organize against it. Once opposition to HB 1282 became evident, including our work, and the ACLU spoke out against it as well, the sponsors made amendments to it to try to claim that, okay, now it's a better bill, it doesn't really affect your rights. But what it would have still done was to create a blacklist of people and organizations who were suspected of supporting BDS. So we still opposed it. We organized. We pulled together the various groups who were interested in opposing it. We spoke out on social media. We attended meetings and hearings in the General Assembly. We also had an online letter-writing campaign with the help of the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights. And we also used our personal contacts with some of the General Assembly members. Even after it was amended to a blacklist, we continued to oppose it. And finally, our voices were heard, and it ultimately died in committee. So I think that was a victory. Yeah. Now, HJ 177 was a resolution, not a bill. In other words, it wasn't a law, it was just a statement. But nevertheless, it had some false claims and it vilified people who support Palestinian human rights. And it ignored the fact that engaging in BDS to advance human rights is a time-honored tactic for people to seek justice. Unfortunately, many members of the General Assembly viewed that as a compromise between Israel affinity groups and free speech defenders and human rights activists, and they ended up voting for it and passing it. So you win some, you lose some, but we won the better one, which is the bill, which would have been a really egregious law if it was passed. So in 2016, we overall achieved, prevented a law from happening. They came back in 2017 and tried again. This time, they came with a bill called HB 2261, which would have amended the Virginia Human Rights Act to redefine anti-Semitism as including, quote, any discourse that demonizes or delegitimizes the policies and actions of the Israeli government. Unquote, yeah. And that's what they're trying to do in a lot of places, including Congress now. It also would have required the governing boards of public universities to issue policies prohibiting discrimination as defined in the amended Human Rights Act. We felt that this had to be opposed because, for many reasons, including one, it would single out one religious discrimination, anti-Semitism, over all others. It would have used an overly broad definition of anti-Semitism, and it would have stifled free speech by equating legitimate political opposition to Israel's policies and actions with anti-Semitism, and that was just wrong. So in 2017, we had a little bit of an easier time because we had already organized. In 2016, we were scrambling, really, to pull ourselves together. In 2017, we had the structure in place. We were able to, with advanced organization, we were able to organize a lobby day where we had about 21 members of our coalition go down to Richmond, General Assembly, and we had meetings with the offices of 37 delegates and senators, including many members of the House and Senate Rules Committees, which were vetting the bill. And our efforts again paid off. HB 2261 died in committee. So, So in 2018, they came back again with more legislation. In 2018, what they came up with was three bills that would give more power and independence to a part of the Virginia government, which is called the Virginia Israel Advisory Board, a very unusual board. Jim will talk about that a little more. And by the way, that board had been the one that would have, under the first bill in 2016, that board would have been the one to create the blacklist that they wanted to create. Didn't happen, but that's what they tried to do. So it was very suspicious that they wanted to give that board more independence and more power all of a sudden. And they also had a couple of bills just giving verbal accolades to Israel. All this while Israel happens to be one of the worst human rights offenders in the world and also happens to be pushing legislation to suppress the free speech of Americans. So we opposed HB 1297 to give more power to the VIAB because we were concerned that the VIAB would use its expanded power to further an unsanctioned political mission of supporting Israeli interests over the best interests of Virginia citizens. Again, we organized, we wrote letters, we made personal contacts with state senators and delegates, and we again had a lobby day where we met with the offices of about 40 members of the House and Senate Rules Committees, which were vetting the bills. In this case, in 2018, there was actually a debate between the House and the Senate because they had introduced three bills to basically achieve the same thing but in different ways. And we tried to weigh in, and we showed up at the meetings of the Rules Committee where it was being considered. In the end, there was a compromise bill which reorganized the VIAB under the General Assembly instead of the executive branch, instead of under the governor, which gives them a little more power, but is probably better than the full power and independence that they would have had under the original bill. We also opposed the bills that were trying to just give accolades to the state of Israel, but those passed, but again, these are just resolutions. They are detrimental because they kind of create this mindset that in a lot of cases includes a lot of misinformation. But that's generally what we've been doing. We've also worked a little bit on Capitol Hill. We supported HR Betty McCollum's bill on a lobby day on Capitol Hill. In general, I just end up saying, quoting Einstein's call to action, the quote, "The world," this is attributed to Albert Einstein, "the world is a bit dangerous place to live, not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who don't do anything about it." To me, that's a call to action. This means being active, not just bandaging the wounds, but taking direct action to prevent injustice and human rights abuses from happening in the first place. Human rights abuses should not be rewarded. They should be punished. The best peaceful, nonviolent punishment option in the case of Israel-Palestine right now is boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. So BDS worked. Yeah, it worked to peacefully end apartheid in South Africa, and we believe it can work to end apartheid and human rights abuses in Israel-Palestine. But we need to work on defending the rights of free speech in order to achieve that. on the grassroots local level. So that's all I have. Thanks.
James Metz retired after a career in information technology, working in both the public and private sectors in 2013, inspired by a community discussion of Sandy Toland's book, The Lemon Tree. Metz and his wife, Suzanne Halberg, joined with another couple to co-found Richmonders for Peace in Israel-Palestine. And in 2016, RPIP joined forces with Freedom to Boycott Virginia, now known as VCHR, to lobby against and defeat anti-BDS legislation that was introduced in the Virginia General Assembly. Metz and Halberg live in Richmond, Virginia. So please welcome James Metz.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. I'm going to follow up from where Paul left off. He mentioned some legislative campaigns that we had at the General Assembly, and during those campaigns, we encountered a state agency called the Virginia Israel Advisory Board. We felt that this was an unusual organization to be a state agency. And we have tried different strategies to try and contain them, if not disqualify them. We have appeared before budget hearings to suggest that they be defunded. We did appear before committee hearings to ask that they be restrained and have greater supervision. Well, this summer we're going to launch a new strategy. We're going to talk to our General Assembly to ask them to pass a resolution to conduct a what's called a JLARC study of the Virginia Israel Advisory Board. JLARC stands for Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission. It is comprised of some members from the House of Delegates and the State Senate. There's a professional staff of some 25 business analysts, and it takes a resolution passed by both chambers of the General Assembly to initiate this. And if there is some overriding concern with a state agency, as we have, we're hoping that they will pass this resolution. So what I would like to do today is I'm going to pretend you are the Virginia General Assembly, and I'm going to try and make the case that we need to pass this resolution to conduct this study. And before I go into that, however, I do need to do a little background. In 1996, an up-and-coming young Republican in the Virginia House of Delegates introduced a bill that created the Virginia Israel Advisory Board. You may have heard of this individual. His name is Eric Cantor. The original intent of the Virginia Israel Advisory Board was to advise the governor on ways to improve the economic and cultural links between Israel and the Commonwealth of Virginia, and also to represent a conduit for people in the Jewish community who had interests that they felt the governor should be aware of. It was so successful that they used that charter to create the Asian Advisory Board and then the Latino Advisory Board. Well, since its creation, the Virginia Israel Advisory Board has really gone beyond its charter. It has taken on, for instance, responsibilities for economic development, getting Israeli companies together with Virginia companies or Virginia governments or Virginia universities to create enterprises that create jobs and contribute to the tax revenue for the Commonwealth. We're concerned about the fact that they are operating totally independent from the supervisory agency that has responsibility for economic development. The Virginia Economic Development Partnership is supposed to do the planning and the coordination and the evaluation of economic initiatives. However, the Virginia Israel Advisory Board is out here doing its own thing. We think that the fact that there is no oversight and coordination would be one reason to launch a JLARC study. Another reason, I'm going to ask the Sesame Street quiz question. Which one of these is not like the others? If you answered the state agency and the state seal on the left, you're right. That's the Virginia Israel Advisory Board and its seal. It has customized the Commonwealth of Virginia's seal for its own purposes. On the right-hand side is the official seal of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and listed there are the three state agencies that I mentioned earlier. We feel that the iconography on that state seal on the left and the banner in front, which declares its independence from the office of the governor, where all other economic initiatives are managed, indicate a chauvinism and an entitlement that are not hallmarks of a state agency. And we think that they represent a de facto representation of the political interests of the state of Israel, and we think it needs to end. I'm going to pass that since we already discussed that. Well, no, actually, I will go back to that. Just to remind you what Paul said, this is an example, really, of this intrusion of Israel's interests into the state business of the Commonwealth. He mentioned that in the final version of 1282, the Virginia Israel Advisory Board was named as the state agency to keep tabs on companies doing business with the Commonwealth and record any of those that were involved in BDS activities, and then make an assessment as to, well, what would the impact be on bringing jobs and businesses into the Commonwealth if that were allowed to continue. We think that's not an appropriate role for a state agency. Well, I've kind of told you what, by statute, the purpose of the Virginia Israel Advisory Board is supposed to be. If you go onto the website, viab.org, you will see how the Virginia Israel Advisory Board represents its mission. It sees itself as, you know, providing this bridge between Israeli companies and entities here in the Commonwealth and offering to create opportunities for the Israeli companies, thereby making what they call Virginia a beta state, a gateway to the United States and the Commonwealth of Virginia in particular, especially our defense industries, our homeland security, the Pentagon, so forth. We can definitely see that their interests are somewhat different than perhaps other people in the Commonwealth. Here's something that they advertise in their annual report for 2018, where there are roadblocks. The VIAB will create opportunities to get around those roadblocks. The Memorandum of Understanding, which governs the military aid agreement that the United States has with Israel over the next decade, includes a provision for phasing out what's called the offshore procurement provision. Well, this means that Israeli companies in the defense industry are going to be receiving less and less U.S. dollars for their products as it shifts back to the United States. VIAB offers the help in setting up U.S. affiliates so that phase out of the OSP can be circumvented. If not against the letter of the law, it's certainly against the spirit of the law. And finally, a look at the management of the Virginia-Israel Advisory Board, I think, is instructive. Mel Chaskin has been with the Virginia-Israel Advisory Board, the chairman, since its beginning. He is a government contractor in Northern Virginia, specializing in defense. Our newest member of the management team is Doe Hoke. You can see that he has an impressive resume, but I want to draw your attention to his involvement in setting up and managing American-Israeli chambers of commerce. If you ask me, that's how they perceive the Virginia-Israel Advisory Board. It is a chamber of commerce inside state government, financed by taxpayer money, and even housed in state buildings. Well, as members of the General Assembly, you may be willing to turn a blind eye to some of these issues about conflict of interest and supervision, or the lack of it. But if it's good for the Virginia economy, perhaps you will overlook those weaknesses. The VIAB produces an annual report. It's the only measure of accountability that's expected of them. They report only two measures: how many jobs that are contributed by these entities that they create. For instance, Sabra Hummus, well, they created 100 jobs this past year. Or the Oran Safety Glass Company, they contributed 50 jobs this year. That's their measure of a contribution to the Virginia economy. Well, is there a way of corroborating these claims? And we went to look at the balance of trade between the Commonwealth of Virginia and Israel. And what you'll see there on the top line is the imports from Israel to the Commonwealth of Virginia over the past 10 years. It has more than doubled over that period of time. The bottom line in red shows exports from the Commonwealth of Virginia to Israel, and that line has been relatively flat. And the space in between is Israel's trade deficit with Israel over the past 10 years. It's certainly not definitive, but I think it's enough to call into question, is the Virginia-Israel Advisory Board contributing to the economy of Virginia? Well, what are your constituents saying about the Virginia-Israel Advisory Board? We posed that question in a survey, a Google survey that we conducted in the fall of 2018, where we asked the Virginia respondents, do you agree to the following statement? Should Virginia taxpayers not continue to subsidize Israeli businesses when, in fact, the latest trade deficit with Israel approached $500 million. Well, a significant plurality of the respondents, there were some 2,110 respondents, 38.1% said, they agreed that Virginia taxpayers should not continue to subsidize the VIAB. Well, I ask you, has the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights justified a JLARC study of the Israel Advisory Board? I hope that we've demonstrated that there is a conflict of interest. Being named in bills and resolutions that represent the interests of Israel and not the Commonwealth, exploiting their status within the state government to create workarounds of various trade restrictions, as with the OSP. I hope we've demonstrated that the body at least needs more coordination and oversight. It's completely independent. And finally, I think that there is some question that needs to be looked into further as to whether or not it's contributing to the economy of the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Next up is Kathy Drinkard. She's a retired teacher and elementary school counselor. She's long been concerned about the suffering in the Palestinian territories and has been involved with her church on the issue for more than a decade. She's traveled to the region four times, most recently fall of 2018, a trip she helped plan. During her second trip, she spent 10 days in Nablus visiting an Anglican congregation, which is in partnership with her church. Her third trip was to participate in the seminar Faith in the Face of Empire, sponsored by Reverend Mitri Raheb and Bright Stars of Bethlehem. She's currently chair of the Ministry for Middle East Peace and Justice at Grace Presbyterian Church in Springfield. Kathy Drinkard has assisted Jean Trabalsi and the VCHR on the issue of inaccurate history in Virginia history and social studies textbooks, K through 12. She's attended this conference. I don't think this is a coincidence. She's attended this conference for the past 3 years. Please welcome Kathy Drinkard.
Thank you, Grant, and thank you, everybody, for being here all the way to the end. So I am going to talk a little bit about what we've been doing to try to ensure some accuracy in the history textbooks in the state of Virginia. And there we are. Okay. And the questions that I'm going to try to address this afternoon are how we learned about the textbook changes and who's making them, what the impact of the changes is, and how our coalition is responding. This is a screenshot of our website, and you can learn more about our textbook campaign at that website. We believe in accuracy and documentation as part of good education. And so we were concerned to learn that about an organization that was proposing edits to Virginia textbooks, some of which gave an inaccurate picture of the conflict. In the spring of last year, our group was alerted to proposed edits for 12 third through 12th grade history and social studies textbooks by a posting of a webcast on the Israel Lobby Archive webpage hosted by IRMEP. Here you can see a screen capture of the webcast featuring Eliza Kramer Elias, director of the Institute for Curriculum Services, a nonprofit based in San Francisco. The host, David Bernstein, is president and CEO of the Jewish Council for Public Affairs. ICS describes its mission as an effort to improve the quality of K through 12 education on Jews, Judaism, and Israel in the United States by developing standards curricula and training teachers around the country. ICS, among other things, provides online seminars, writes curricula. It has an online library and a teacher toolkit, which includes a new booklet this year on teaching the Arab-Israeli conflict and the peace process. In the podcast, Kramer Elias describes working behind the scenes with textbook publishers and claims that ICS has already made more than 11,000 edits to textbooks used in all 50 states. She says that many of the major textbook publishers come to them to work with them on manuscripts development, and adding that about 85% of the proposed edits end up getting accepted. The ICS review of Virginia textbooks was requested by three Israel affinity organizations in Virginia: the Jewish Community Federation of Richmond, the United Jewish Federation of Tidewater, and the Jewish Community Relations Council of Greater Washington. And here you see a cover letter addressed to the Department of Education that accompanied the proposed edits. These organizations endorsed the edits and requested that they be adopted. They also indicated that they were going to forward the changes to the textbook companies. These edits were submitted during a 30-day public comment period that's built into every Virginia textbook review process that's held every 7 years. ICS works similarly with Jewish community relations councils across the country to introduce changes during textbook adoption processes. ICS has recommended changes that range from the correction of capitalization and punctuation to modifications in the way that Judaism is presented to alterations in the portrayal of the Israel-Palestine conflict. With regard to the conflict, the ICS edits address several themes. They qualify claims of Islam as expressing Muslim religious belief, while they maintain that those of Judaism represent God's covenant. They sanitize textbook language, settlements become communities, the wall becomes a security fence. Kind of similarly to what James North was talking about earlier today. They emphasize Arab culpability for all crisis initiation and never Israeli culpability. They discourage students from conducting open internet research. They relabel maps to indicate Israeli possession of territory as settled when the rest of the world, including the U.S., disagrees, and they delete all references to Palestinian and occupied territories. This is an example of one ICS edit found in a high school textbook called World History, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. This example comes from a cause and effect chart. The original language said ongoing conflict over Israeli occupied territories. The proposed change says ongoing conflict over Israeli control of West Bank and Gaza. The rationale given for the change is that the term occupied territories is politicized and inappropriate for a public school text. The proposed change eliminates the reference to the occupied territories, and in our view, it introduces in students' minds the idea that there is a legitimate dispute over who should control these areas, sidestepping the consensus of most of the world that Israel's control and presence in the West Bank violates international law. We believe that many of the recently proposed changes would degrade the accuracy of Virginia's textbooks. We think they distort history, conflict with the findings of international law, and depict a partisan view. They diminish the validity of the views and concerns of Arabs and Muslims and Palestinians while promoting the legitimacy of Israeli actions and positions. We suspect that many of the previously proposed edits have already been adopted, causing some of the problematic material that we find in the current textbooks. We think such changes fail to comply with Virginia's standards of learning and prevent students from obtaining the information they need to wrestle with the difficult issues of our day. So what has VCHR been doing to try to push back against this? We've done several things since last year to work for a more accurate representation of the Israel-Palestine conflict. In May of 2018, the coalition created this fact sheet, and this is one part of it. This is the top of it. It identifies many of the edit's themes, gives an example for each theme, and explains why the edit is problematic. For example, the first theme listed in the first column of the chart addresses edits that reference Palestine only as mandatory Palestine or Palestinians, not as a state or a designation of an identifiable territory. In the second column is listed the type of change requested and the rationale. The edit says, change Israel and Palestine to Israel and Palestinians, because there is no state of Palestine and never has been one. In the third column, we provide the reasons the change is inaccurate, and here we say, since 1150 BCE, words like Philistine and Palestina have been used to reference the region, and currently 70% of UN members recognize the state of Palestine. So this is the rest of the fact sheet. We sent it to Virginia-based professors who are Middle East experts and asked for their support in our campaign. 16 of them agreed to help. And with these signatories, we then drafted a letter that requested the rejection of the ICS edits. We sent it to the textbook publishers, to officials in the state executive branch, including the governor and the secretary of education, and to members of Virginia's General Assembly, including members of the education committees. In addition, in May last year, we sent out a press release about our findings to many media outlets, both statewide and further beyond. The next month, some of our members appeared in a podcast about our work. Titled Israel Lobby Seeks to Erase Occupation from Virginia School Books, it can be viewed on the electronic Intifada website. Last summer, our group testified before the Virginia Board of Education about textbook inaccuracy and the lack of transparency in the review process. Our members spoke about being required to file a Freedom of Information Act request just to find out the names of the history textbook review committee members. Once we got those names, we did our own research, and we learned that most were K through 12 teachers, several were professors who taught in university education departments, but not one had any expertise on the Middle East. In January of this year, our group testified at the Virginia General Assembly's public budget hearings in Roanoke and Richmond. We asked that the budgeted purchase of $140 million in textbooks for the 2019-20 school year be made contingent upon an official legislative study, a JLARC study like the one that Jim mentioned just a few minutes ago. And the purpose of that study is to assess the textbook accuracy and the effectiveness and transparency of the review process. Soon afterward, we lobbied 24 state senators and delegates in Richmond and asked for a similar study. And as this was all unfolding, we were also trying to gain access to the textbooks themselves. And when we did, the number of problems that we saw persuaded us that we needed to address them directly with our own textbook review committee. Since the fall of 2018, our committee has reviewed 6 history textbooks. With access to digital copies of the books, our reviewers were able to read the relevant material. When they found a section of problematic text, they entered it into a graphic organizer like the one that you can see here. The book text, shown in the top box of the graphic, says Israel built a security fence separating it from the West Bank. The barrier protects Israeli citizens from Palestinian terrorists and suicide bombers. Our reviewer then rewrote the text to make it more accurate. In the second box, security fence was changed to separation wall, then with the explanation that the wall has been declared illegal by the International Court of Justice because it limits Palestinian movement and illegally seizes Palestinian land. The last box provides the rationale for the change and cites a source for the information presented. It explains that 85% of the barrier has been built on Palestinian land and cites B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, as the information source. In January of this year, we sent these comments. So we have, you know, pages and pages of comments and rewriting that were specific to different textbooks. And in January, we sent those to the Department of Education and to the publishers of the textbooks. We are slowly beginning to receive some responses from those. A few people have responded, but certainly not everyone. What will ultimately result from the initial response of, okay, thank you for sending us this information, is still kind of uncertain. So to sum up, there's a number of things we've learned. One of them is textbook companies are vulnerable. Textbooks are written and reviewed by generalists, not experts. And we need to pay attention to the fact that because they're generalists, we have to pay attention to what they say to what they're teaching our kids. The adoption process in Virginia is not very transparent. The other thing to keep in mind is that the work of the ICS is ongoing nationwide, And while it may make some needed corrections in certain areas, the work also presents a one-sided picture in other aspects and dismisses the real experience of Palestinians, Muslims, and Arabs. We've also realized that in addition to working to change the textbooks, we need to give school systems supplementary materials that provide a more complete rendering of the subject. And we also have found, interestingly, and maybe not surprisingly, that bias and inaccuracy in textbooks are not limited to the Israel-Palestine conflict, but can be found in an information taught in a variety of history and science subjects, including civil rights and climate change. So that is where we are at this point, and our work will continue. And I think one of the things that I would love for people to take away from this is that if you live in another state and can begin to look at textbooks from your point, the more these publishers hear from people about their unhappiness with what the books say, the more likely that we are to get some changes. So thank you.
You have been listening to members of the Virginia Coalition for Human Rights speaking about their programs to counter the effects of the Israeli lobby in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that is all the time we have this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.